couple of weeks ago, I preached the message, God's Greatest Weapon, about the power of family, and I hope you guys were able to catch it if you weren't here. It was a sermon that had been on my heart for some time to preach, and so it was just a particularly strong one. The one today is also going to be about family, more so about marriage and romance. So let's open up our Bibles to Proverbs 18:22. Very simple verse for today. Proverbs 18, verse 22. I'll read it for us in the ESV. It says, "He who finds a wife finds a good thing and obtains favor from the Lord." Men of the house, repeat after me. I want a good thing. Amen. It's a very simple but powerful verse. He who finds a wife finds a good thing and obtains favor from the Lord. But sadly, with media overtaking our generation is the most connected out of any previous generation. I mean, you guys can probably keep in touch with your high school friends, your junior high friends, through Facebook and through other means. Despite just having the world at our fingertips, the marriage rate is falling dramatically. And more people are becoming jaded by family. I'm going to put up a slide right here. And this, you guys can't read it, but you can kind of see it. What you see are these black dots. These represent nations across the OECD, okay, over all like the top nations of this world. The black dots was the marriage rate in 1970. The blue bar is where the marriage rate is in 2009. So if you look at Belgium and Hungary, their marriage rate went to half. Okay, most of the other nations dropped about 30 to 40%. The middle bar right here is, I guess it's red. I'm colorblind, but I think it's red. That bar, it shows all the countries of the world, the top countries of the world. And the marriage rate has dropped by more than 35% since 1970. That means that each year there are 35% less families than in 1970. All right, marriage affects children as well. You guys can take down that slide. It's dramatic. And just as the marriage rate is dropping, the divorce rate is growing. It's actually gotten about steady. In 1970, the divorce rate spiked. But since the marriage rate is going down, the divorce rate seems to be going down as well. But really, it's more constant. And you guys know, I mean, most of your families, a lot of families in this place, whether it's your immediate family or your relatives, have been affected by divorce. And so romance has become a lot more complicated than it used to be. If you watch a video on diamond rings, you'll find out that even in the past 100 years, engagement and all the things that goes with engagement has radically changed in just 100 years. And so more and more people are getting jaded by romance. More and more people are trying to do it their own way. And more people are just giving up on love. They're just simply giving up. Today's sermon is titled, God of Romance. God of Romance. And today, I promised you guys that when we first took over as campus pastors here, that I would share testimonies here about Sky and about myself. And today is going to be the testimony of our love story. And I share this because I hope that it inspires you all, especially regarding romance. There is very little hope out there today for many people regarding romance, because they just see marriages fall apart. They see dating relationships fall apart. They get jaded easily. And they also look at Christians and they feel it's too rigid. Oh, God is too controlling. I kind of want to do it my own way. But I hope that as you hear this testimony, you'll see just how amazing our God is, especially regarding romance. So my story begins when I was an awkward teenager. And I had gone to a private school up through eighth grade where we had only about 20 people in our class. And so there was only about 12 girls, and they were the same girls since kindergarten. And then in ninth grade, which is high school in America, I transferred to a public school, which had about 400 kids per class, for the first year, second year, 400 each. And so I went from seeing about the same 12 girls for my first, 9 years of adolescence to suddenly seeing a lot of girls, upper class girls as well. And it was at that special time and of puberty, and so I went through so many different crushes. I was girl crazy throughout high school, and I remember one guy was like, "Hey, do you have a crush on this girl?" And I'm like, "No, why are you staring at her all through class?" And I was like, "Oh shoot, I gotta like, you know, take control here." No idea what I was doing, but. As girl crazy as I was, I only dated twice in high school. I dated once my junior year and then dated once right after graduating. And as much as I was girl crazy, I was also goal oriented. And my parents, they married when they were 18 and 19 years old. My older sister married at 21, and my younger sister would also marry at the age of 21. And so young for my family, you know, that was kind of what was expected. And so in my mind, I thought I would be married by 19, 20, 21 at the latest, and I would definitely have kids by 24. So when I graduated from high school, I was reading books on marriage. I know this is totally different mindset here, but you know, my best friend married at 19. It's very different, I guess, culture that I grew up in the States. But after I broke up with my second girlfriend, it was actually during my first semester of college. I had to drop that semester because of injury. So I started college late and broke up with her, and I was pretty heartbroken because I'd liked her for a long time, had a lot of expectation in it, and of course it all crumbled, and I was just jaded. I was discouraged. I was frustrated, as a lot of you have experienced when you go through a breakup. But at the same time, I was just starting to grow with God. I had just discovered worship music, good worship music, not the old choruses with the synthesizer, but like, you know, Hillsong United or Matt Redman. And I began to really pursue the Lord. So during my spring semester, which was really my first semester in college in 2001, I joined a Christian fellowship and I started to get involved. I learned how to pray. I learned how to read the word. This is stuff that I taught you guys a few months ago in one of my sermons. And I really grew with the Lord. And as I grew with him, I realized how much time I had wasted focused on girls throughout my teenage years. I'm just being honest. I spent a lot of time thinking about girls through my teenage years. And as I was tasting and seeing that the Lord was good, I was kind of frustrated with myself. What was I thinking, pursuing these girls in my immaturity and focusing on them so much? And as I was processing this, I felt the Lord put it on my heart, and this is for me individually, this is not for everyone here, don't worry, but God put it on my heart to give up dating and to give up marriage until after I graduated from college. Now, remember, my mindset was I wanted to get married my first year in college. This wasn't like, oh, maybe I'll get married my fourth year. I wanted to have kids by the time I was a fourth year in college. And so, but as I prayed about it, and I was just being so satisfied by the Lord, like we sang earlier, I was just being so blessed by him, I gave up pursuing girls to him. And so in college, God was really able to deal with me deep. And my areas, struggles with lust, struggles with identity, struggles with purity, these different things, God strengthened me greatly. Because I wasn't constantly getting distracted by girls, but my eyes were on him. And as my eyes were on him, and I was growing in his word and growing in prayer, he just began to cleanse me of all my selfishness, of all my just my worldliness that I had been walking with through my teenage years. It was so good. And by the time I was a fifth year in college, my relationships with my friends and people around me were so pure and so genuine because there was no ulterior motives, there was no misconceptions or confusion. I really became like family with those in my fellowship, especially those that I was shepherding. During my last year in college, I shepherded the first years in my college fellowship. We'll put up a picture of them. So this is, you can't really see closely, but I took care of the first years of an Asian fellowship at Virginia Tech. And there's some familiar faces in there that you'll see in the next slide. This next slide is of newbies Bible study. These are people that accepted Christ and were just really growing with the Lord. You might notice some familiar faces. Bottom right is Simi. She's part of the Sydney church plant team. The far right is my wife, Sky. No idea. She was actually dating someone else at this time. Next slide. This was when Sky and I first met. I am rocking the headband. So yeah, she was 18 at the time. I was a fifth year, and she really viewed me as a father figure, and I would take care of this fellowship. It's very ironic how God prepared me for orphanage ministry through this fellowship. I don't know if you saw the picture before, but I'm just not joking. The girls in this class were almost all 4'9" to 5'2", around that range. So they're also tiny, and a lot of them had broken pasts. Different broken pasts, and really needed a father figure. And so, I mean, I shepherded the men as well, but these girls, they would call me Mama Goose because I would walk around campus and they would follow me. And they're all like, you know, this tall. And it was just kind of silly, but it was sweet. And it was just because I was in such a place of purity and pursuing the Lord, they felt so safe. And so we were really able to just go deep. A lot of love was communicated. They experienced a lot of healing. And God was clearly preparing me for my calling of serving here in South Korea. And I remember during that fifth year, my parents finally confronted me about my lack of interest in women. And my dad pulled me aside, and he's like, you know, we've noticed that, you know. That. And I said, don't worry, Dad. I do want to get married. I am interested in women. I do want to get married, and thankfully my parents, they left it at that. They never pressured me again after they confronted me during that year. And when I graduated in 2005, I remember during my first year, I thought, well, if I'm obedient to the Lord, when I graduate, God's just, like, she's going to, like, just come through, like, some gift, just jump out. Like, here's my wife, and I'm going to get married right away because I was obedient to the Lord. But by the time I graduated, God had cleansed me so much of my own selfish pursuits and my own, like, I got to have this, that I wasn't anxious about marriage. And the truth was, I was focused on missions. Whereas during my first year in college, I had no heart for missions or going abroad. Over those years of walking with the Lord in intimacy, he had given me that heart. And so God had called me to move to Korea at the end of 2005 to live in the orphanage and to serve the kids. So I was able to do that, no strings attached, no girlfriend I'm leaving behind, you know, no broken romance, just all out for the Lord. So I came to Korea, and during my first few years, I was just overwhelmed. I was overwhelmed with learning the language, with learning to teach the kids, growing the ministry, serving here in the church. I was really spread thin. And so I didn't look around. It's like God had trained my mind to not be interested in girls, or my mind had just gotten to that place. Whereas when I was a teenager, I was so focused on girls. Once I came to Korea, because I had not focused on them for many years, I was still not distracted. I was focused on the ministry. But by the time 2009 came around, people at the church started to badger me. Started to be like, you need to get married. You need to get married. You know, you're not as young as you used to be. And so I was like, okay, I'll get married. I'm sure God will just give me my wife because I have surrendered my life to him. He'll just bring her to me. And she'll have a heart for North Korea. She'll be ready to give up her life for martyrdom. You know, just go out, like surrender all. She's got to be like that unique because God's made me that unique for this calling. So it'll just happen. And that was my mindset. It will just happen. And of course, nothing happened during 2009. But then something peculiar happened towards the end of that year, and it was very important for me. And I feel that every person needs to go through this at one point or another in their life. But a prophetic friend came up to me after a Friday fire, and he gave me one of those words you don't want to hear. He said, I was praying for you, and I saw two arrows in your heart, and I don't know what they are, but I feel like it has to do with something with relationships. And I'm like, great, thanks. Like, made me feel depressed, you know, just telling me, like, I got these arrows in my heart. And I shook it off, and I said, no, I haven't dated in so long. I forgave, you know, those girls of anything, you know, long ago, my ex-girlfriends. I've moved on. I'm fine. And I just kind of shook it off, and I went on. But I couldn't shake that word. I couldn't shake what he had shared with me. And God began to convict me that I needed healing. I needed healing. And so I decided to take a week in 2009 to fast. A week to fast and to pray and to just invite God to heal whatever it is he needed to heal. I couldn't identify it in my mind. I didn't know what was wrong with me. I felt like there was no lack. But in my spirit, there was a sense that there was something off about me. And God wanted to heal me. So I spoke to two prophetic friends and I told them of my fast. And I asked them, please pray for me. pray with me through this. And I began fasting, and I think on the third day, one of my friends called me, and my friend said, I feel like these two arrows represent something to do with expectation and satisfaction. That you don't really have expectation that God can satisfy you. That because of things in the past and just because of the way you're walking with God, expectation and satisfaction, this is what God wants to heal you in. Now, remember, as I heard, I'm not that much of a feeler. And so I was just like, I don't know. And then an email popped up on my computer, and it was from the other friend. And I opened it as I'm talking to this other friend, and on it it said, I was just praying for you, and I really feel like those two arrows have something to do with expectation and satisfaction. And I was like, oh, okay, all right, I need to pray. And I hung up with my friend. I remember I just went into, to another room, lay down on the floor, and I just laid there. And I was like, God, whatever you want to do, just do it. And I welcome you. And I remember as I laid there, tears just started to stream down my face. And I didn't even know why. I didn't know what was going on in me. I didn't know what God was doing, but I just knew God was healing me. I knew God was doing something deep within me that I couldn't even touch in the physical. God was healing me. And I finished that week fasting, and then over the following weeks and months, God began to release revelations of what that expectation and satisfaction really meant. And that in my past relationships, I tried everything to try and please my past girlfriends. But, just because of differences, because of our immaturity, because of different reasons, I could not satisfy them. And I would end up rejected. I would end up disappointed. And I would end up just feeling like it's hopeless. I can't satisfy the opposite sex. I just, like, there's going to be a place in my marriage that I'll get to where I just can't cross that bar. Like, she'll want this much, but I can only fulfill this much because I'm human and because, I'm just not that perfect. So it was this expectation that I couldn't satisfy my spouse. And then there was also a misconception that as I had surrendered my life to the Lord, that I had to marry the super Christian. I had to marry this woman that was just going to be all out for the Lord, prayer warrior. We're going to take North Korea and we're going to go forth and we're going to love the orphans. And she would be the super Christian that I needed to partner with for ministry. And that marriage would be all about ministry. Marriage would be all about God's work. But it wouldn't be fun. It wouldn't be sweet. It wouldn't be restful because God had called me to Korea. And this is the calling I had to do. And as I surrendered my life to the Lord, I was surrendering my joy. I was surrendering my own pursuits and all these things. And God began to correct me in this. And God began to speak something in me that he would speak to me over and over and over again. And he said, you will not marry for ministry. You will marry for love. You will not marry for ministry. You will marry for love. And that I am the author and perfecter of your faith. And just as you had no desire for missions when you were 19, and you were not that strong of a Christian then, I have made you into the man that you are now. As you have surrendered your life to me, as you have laid yourself down, I have molded you, I have strengthened you, I have given you that heart. I can do all things. And you will marry someone who you truly love, who you truly enjoy to be with, who you truly have fun with. And I will mold her. I will give her the calling that I gave you. I will strengthen her as I strengthened you. You leave her to me. These are strong words from the Lord, and they were words that I needed and words that I would need to dwell on. I believe that God didn't just give me a wife at the end of 2009, because I'd been healed. God needed me to take time to meditate on these truths and to really walk them out in strong identity and in trust in him. This was crucial for me, guys. And I really believe if I hadn't gone through that week of healing, I would not be the husband that I am today for Sky, and that our marriage would be different. Well, after that time, I thought, okay, she's got to be right around the corner. And people would say that to me. She's right under your nose, like she's somewhere around here. And nothing was happening. I was asked to lead the church plant to Itaewon. And once again, my schedule got really busy. Once again, I didn't really have time to even look around. I was just busy ministering, shepherding, doing all sorts of things. And finally, towards the end of 2010, I met up with Pastor Christian, and he was just frustrated. He was like, there's got to be someone you're interested in. Like, come on, you know, he had known me since I came to Korea at the end of 2005, and he had known that I had never been interested in anyone. He had never seen me show any interest in anyone. And so he's kind of like trying to, you know, shake me up. And at the same time, I felt God speaking to me that I needed to get the ball rolling. I had just kept waiting for God to send her to me. And I'll tell you that that mindset of they'll come to me and they'll like me for who I am, it's very selfish and it's not biblical. Those that really wanted marriage, they went out and they pursued. Think of Jacob. Think of Ruth. Think of Esther. Okay, they went out. They didn't say, you come to me. I mean, what type of romance is that? It's not very romantic when, you know, everybody's just standing there expecting that, you know, we're just going to like somehow the earth is going to move and we're going to. It doesn't work that way. You got to get out there. And so God was convicting me, get the ball rolling. And I didn't know who to start things off with. Some of my relationships with New Philly had gotten to the point of deep friendship that I didn't feel safe just doing a blind date at that time. There was no dating protocol or anything. And I had heard that a girl was coming to Korea to visit that some friends had talked about before. And she had been involved in ministry, had a heart for Korea. You know, the ministry credentials all lined up. She was, you know, around my age. And so I mentioned this girl to Pastor Christian, and he knew of her as well. And he said, hey, go for it. Like, come on, you know, just date somebody. And so I called up a mutual friend of this friend. And he was like, okay, you know, and set it up. And so I went on my first blind date, my first date in 10 years at the end of 2010. Can you believe that? Girl crazy, you know, for so many years. And then I didn't date for 10 years. Finally went on a blind date at the end of 2010. And it was cordial. You know, it was nice. I was really busy at the time and not in a good place to be going on dating. I was handling restoration cases and two small groups and the church plant team and Jerusalem ministry and the church plant. I was doing so much to the point that our first blind date was here in Shilin at 9:30 at night on a Wednesday night. That was the only time I had. And so we met at a coffee shop and you know, talked for a bit. And I knew she was only here for a short visit. And so I asked her for a second date. And I had no idea what to think the first night. It was just nice conversation, but we didn't even know each other. And so on the second date, we meet up and we're talking. And I mean, ministry-wise, she was just like perfect for orphanage ministry, for North Korea, for all those things. But as we were talking, I wasn't feeling our personalities like really mesh. I was asking her, like, what are your favorite, you know, books, music, movies? And she was listing like a lot of things that I really didn't like. And I didn't say anything. I was, oh, okay, yeah. Oh, Pride and Prejudice. Oh, wow. You know? And so, you know, we just kept talking. But then in the middle of the conversation, she dropped a bomb that she had met up with our mutual friend in between our dates. And he was like, hey, when you guys get married, you know, invite me to the wedding. And she's like, what? What are you saying? You know, she didn't know me either. And he's like, It's going to happen. And so she shares this with me. I'm ready to like punch my friend in the face. I'm like, well, we just met, like slow down. And you know, she was cool about it. And we finished the date, but it kind of unnerved me. And then I find out that her prophetic friends from back home were also telling her that we were meant to get married. And this is a whole nother sermon of stuff that you do not do. All right, one of our rules for leadership here is you do not prophesy babes, babies, or dates. Babes includes dating. Okay, you don't prophesy relationships in this house. And they're doing that, and it's opening up the heart way too soon. And it's forcing me to think about marriage after my second blind date. And so I'm really unnerved. And I remember I met up with a mutual friend. I'm so angry with him. And he's just like, man, the same thing happened to me. I didn't date for a long time. And God opened my heart. And the first person, we just got married, like, you know, really quick and stuff. And I felt very unnerved. And I remember I went home. And it was actually at this time, it was a couple months earlier, Skye came to Korea. Now, she graduated years after I did. She had grown with the Lord a lot. I visited America a few times over those 5 years in between graduating in 2010. And I would see her just now and then, but you know, she was dating other people. There was no interest there, but she had moved out to Korea in 2010 and was at the Itaewon church plant. She was there. So we were hanging out a bit more along with our friend Simi. And I remember when I went home, I was just unnerved. And I was thinking about this blind date girl who was a great, attractive girl, and lined up perfect for the ministry stuff. Someone that I had thought, that type of person that I would marry. I still barely knew her, though. And so I was praying, and I was like, God, you know, this girl is great and all, but I really, really wish that I could marry someone that I could just really be relaxed with, like my friend Sky. And, you know, this girl's like, you know, she's great and everything, but I wish I could marry someone that I could just be really, you know, goofy with, you know, like comfortable with, like my friend Sky, you know, and you know, she's great and all, but I wish I could, you know. And I'm praying this literally out loud. And I'm like, God, you know, someone that I would laugh with, you know, a lot, and, you know, and have a lot of fun with, you know, like Sky. And still, because I led her to Christ, because I had been such a father figure to her during her early years. And you know, we hadn't seen each other over 5 years and stuff. It was just, it's like forbidden. And so I wasn't considering it. And I was just so frustrated and so just overwhelmed. And I remember I lay down at night. Going to sleep, and I was praying, and for the first time, I considered dating Sky. Like, what would that look like? And for the first time in 10 years, some excitement started to creep up this phlegmatic self of mine, you know, this very relaxed self of mine, and I started to get excited at the thought of what it would be like dating Sky, my friend Sky. And at the same time, there was a lot of fear. An uneasiness that came up because we had such a past. And I also knew about Sky was that she had never dated or been attracted to a non-Korean, and she really liked musically artsy guys. It's not me at all. I'm not Korean. I'm not musically talented. I'm not very artsy. And I also knew that, man, you know, we had such a strong friendship. If I were to ask her on a date, this isn't something where it's like she says, no, oh, it's okay. We're just still friends. It's like it would change the dynamic, and I could lose that friendship. So I remember in the morning, I Skyped with my parents, and I told them, hey, do you remember this girl named Sky? She visited our house a couple times, you know, in the few years, and they couldn't remember. But I was like, well, you know, I think I'm kind of interested in her. And my parents were like, yes, like, ask her out today. They're like, do it right away. Go for it. And, you know, like I said, my parents hadn't talked to me about relationships since 2005. But man, they were like waiting, and they said, go for it. And I'm like, well, I got your blessing. And still I felt uneasiness. And that night I met up with Pastor Christian, and you know, we're talking about different things. And then I told him, hey, you know, I think I'm interested in Sky. And he was shocked too. And he's like, I was smiling. He's like, I've never seen you excited for a girl before. He didn't know how to react. And he's like, oh, okay. All right. You know, go for it. But I still felt uneasiness. And I went home, went to sleep. I woke up the next morning, and I found an email from Pastor Christian. And he said, hey, bro, you know, I just want to recommend taking 30 days to pray about it and just to relax, you know, to not rush. And you know, when I read that, peace fell on me, peace I hadn't felt over those, you know, couple days of considering her. And I just felt like that was right. That I don't want to just go off of this, like, I got it, you know, this compulsion or anything. But I wanted to be relaxed. I wanted to go into it relaxed, confident, just moving in my true identity in the Lord. This was crucial for me, guys. As I surrendered that to him, I was planning on asking her out the very next night. But as I read that and I submitted to his, he didn't say do it. He was just like, I recommend it. But as I submitted to it, so much grace. And so being on December 2nd, 2010, I began to pray for her for 30 days, the last days of December. And it was crucial that time. I did not pray, God, make her my wife. All right, that's foolishness. All right, that's control. Rather, I prayed blessing for her. I prayed blessing over her calling, blessing over her health, blessing over her future, blessing over her family. Prayed for her family. I prayed for her past. I prayed for just different things. Each day, I would take time to pray for her. And I would also take time to listen. And I would just take time. God, you want to speak anything. God would give me visions. God would speak to me in different ways. But God never gave me this green light. God never said, she is the one. God never spoke like that. That's not romantic. Okay, a lot of people kind of want that. Like, I just want this person in my lap, or I just want God to make it clear. All right, romance without mystery is not romantic at all. It's just robotic, is basically what it is. There's no freedom in it. Our God is a God of romance. God doesn't want to manipulate your life. God wants to freely, he wants to guide you, but he wants you to enjoy it. He wants to surprise you. He wants there to be mysteries along the way. If he just said, hey, you're supposed to marry this person on this date and go to this place and do these things, you could enjoy it to a degree, but it's not going to be romantic. It's not going to be like, you know, those different flutters of emotions. And so those 30 days, I didn't get this confidence like she is the one, but rather I felt in my heart a surrender that I know I need to be a man and ask her out and go for this. But even if it doesn't work out, I'm not going to be angry at God. I'm not going to be like, God, how did you do this to me? I'm going to relax and I'm going to be confident that the Lord still has someone right for me. What also happened during those 30 days that I didn't know was she went back to America. I knew that. But while she was back in America, she had closure with an ex-boyfriend that she had had some lingering connections with for a while. They finally had complete closure. She was able to move on from that past relationship. Then her dad experienced a lot of healing during that time. There was a lot of reconciliation. Her dad's also in this room listening. But that was a powerful time in 2010. And what was interesting was she was talking with her mom, and I want to try and get this right. Her mom had never allowed her to be interested in a non-Korean. It wasn't that Sky wasn't attracted to them. It's that her mom had just drilled it into her that she would marry a Korean. Because her mom had seen international marriages and the struggles and the stigma. So even when Sky was young and a half Korean boy got interested in her, Sky wasn't interested in the guy, her mom grounded her. Okay? I mean, that was the degree that her mom was like, you will marry a Korean. And so Sky was kind of like joking with her mom and was like, well, mom, you know, there's a lot of international guys at New Philly. You know, how would you feel if I married a non-Korean? Just kind of like half jokingly. But to her surprise, her mom said, oh, it's okay. I'd rather you marry a good, you know, non-Korean guy than a bad Korean guy. And so Sky was just like, oh, like, what's that? And, you know, just kind of left it at that. She didn't have an interest in anyone at that time. But it was a very key word for her to receive. She came back to Korea in early January of 2011. And in my flesh, I wanted to ask her out right away. But she was moving. And I knew that wouldn't be right. And I had to put her first ahead of my own compulsions. And so she came back. I helped her move. She was moving in with our friend Semi and two other girls, Eunice and Sarah Wan. And I was planning to ask her out on a Wednesday. And I was helping her move in on a Monday. And I remember while we were moving her in, Semi brought out Sky's belated birthday gift. Her birthday had passed while she was in America. And the birthday gift was this dollhouse for Sylvanian families. I don't know, I meant to bring the bunny, but Sylvanian families are like these little like animal sets, like little dolls about this big of like bunnies and you know, I don't know what they have, raccoons, I don't know, like different things. And for a previous gift, or she had gotten it at some store, she had gotten the like mother bunny, the female bunny. And they come in different shades, different colors, different outfits, you know, whatever. And so I remember I was looking at her. I didn't know the side about her. And I'm like, You know, she's like, dollhouse, you know. And she's all excited. And Simi said, you know, I tried to find the husband for your bunny. Because they also, you know, they sell them individually. And she said, I could only find the bunnies in different colors. I couldn't find the match. And Sky said, oh, yeah, I'm glad. I don't want any of that interracial stuff. She just, like, said it offhand, like, I don't want any of that interracial stuff. And I was, like, froze. I was like, oh, no. What am I doing? Semi froze, too, because Semi knew that I was going to ask her out. And so both of us are like this. And that was the first moment that she kind of caught on, like, something's weird, you know. She had no idea I was interested in her, you know, up to that point. And I remember as I was driving home, I was just like, I was stressed. Because I'm like, man, I'm going to ask her out and she's going to recoil in disgust. Like, oh, you're like my father. Or like, you know, oh, no, you're like a white guy. Or you know, something like that. Like, she's just not going to be interested. Because I didn't match, you know, those things that she had wanted. And I was nervous because this would affect our friendship. But in affecting that friendship, it would affect my friendship with Simi and, you know, with the other girls in that apartment. And, you know, it would just kind of affect a lot of different things. And so I'm, like, reconsidering everything. I'm driving. I'm like, man, maybe I should just leave it, you know, and just look for someone else. And I'm praying. And my MP3 player was playing, and it changed to another song. It's this Rick Pino song. It's like a spontaneous worship. And all it is this line, "The Lord is with you, mighty warrior. So rise up. So rise up. The Lord is with you, mighty warrior. So rise up." And I'm like, okay, God. Okay. I'm going to do this. And so I knew that it was going to be a shock for her. This wasn't just, you know, let me ask someone out. But this was someone that I had helped lead to Christ. This was someone that I had taught how to drive. This was someone that I had really been like a father figure to. I'd led her healing deliverance session, you know, years ago. And we had had such a neat friendship with just such clear boundaries that I knew I couldn't just be like, so you want to go on a date? I couldn't do that. And so I wrote out what I wanted to tell her. And that Wednesday night, they were doing like, you know, pray for the house. So I went over. And she came home first. And so it was just the two of us just before people came home. And the first thing I told her was, "Sky, you know I helped lead you to Christ. And I know I discipled you and you've grown a lot. But I wanted to tell you that I no longer see you as my disciple. I no longer see you as, you know, someone below me. I see you as an equal. I really honor how you've grown with the Lord." And she had grown over those 5 years that we had been apart. And I left it at that. I just told her that. But that was when she was shocked and like her mouth like dropped that I would even say something like that. And then, you know, a bunch of people came into the apartment and we prayed. And then at the end of the night, I pulled her into one of the rooms and I sat down and I gave her the note and, you know, let her read it. And then I asked her on a date. Like, I can't remember what I said, but I asked her, and I was expecting some sort of reaction. And in my mind, I was like, oh, this is probably going to, like, she's going to, like, recoil or be like, what is this? Like, be in shock. And she'll need, like, 3 weeks of praying for God to, like, change her heart dramatically. That's what I thought would happen, if she was even going to say yes. But as she's reading, as I'm talking to her, she's just smiling. And she was stunned, but she wasn't showing it. She's just smiling. And I'm like, I get flustered and my face turns like completely red. And I'm just like, I didn't expect you, you know, to react like this. And I was like, you know, I'll just give you time. You can get back to me. And I remember leaving and the other girls noticed my face was red, but they had no idea why. And they're like, bye. And I left. And God did a quick work. She was really shocked and she didn't know what to think. And she went to bed that night, you know, pretty like shaken. But within just about a day, God had changed her heart and even changed the way that she viewed me to the point where she was willing, she was open to go on a date with me. And so we started dating in January of 2011, and it went pretty quick because we had such a past. We knew each other very well, and it was just amazing how we just kind of slid in together, and we had so much fun. We just really enjoyed each other. It was very, very sweet. Now, one of the concerns was her parents. How are they going to react to this white guy dating her? And so we set up a Skype with her father. And this was after, you know, I'd seen some other friends in the house have a lot of struggles with their, you know, the father-in-law or with, you know, the father of the person they were dating. So I didn't know what to expect. And we Skyped with him. He had been saved just a few years earlier. And he's just smiling. And his son is there as well, her younger brother. And we're just talking. And at one point he says, "John Michael, you helped lead my daughter to Christ. She helped lead my son to Christ. And they helped lead me to Christ. I am forever grateful to you. I thank you. I love you. I trust you. I bless you." He said all four of those. And I'm just like, I don't even know you, you know. And he's saying this and I'm just shocked. And we're ecstatic. We're so blessed. And you know, we continue on. Well, her mom is not saved yet. She had her concerns. You're dating this missionary, you know, and he's, you know, he's not Korean. You know, she felt like she's still young. She just moved to Korea. Her mom had a lot of concerns. So her mom came out to Korea to visit and took us to Jeju-do with her waisunmo, her aunt. We went down to Jeju-do for a few days. And it was during that time that I was going to ask her for the blessing. to propose to Skye. And we're there in Jeju, though, and that day that I was going to talk with her mom, her dad calls from America. Abuji calls, and she's like, oh, you know, Appa. And he's like, is John Michael there? And she's like, yeah, well, let me talk to him. She's like, oh, you know, like gives it to me. And he starts talking to me, and he says, I had a dream last night. And in this dream, you were sitting at a table with Skye and her mother, and I was coming in and serving food. And he basically had like, he's called it like buckets of banchan basically. And he was serving banchan to us. And he says, you know, what this dream means is that you're family now. Now, I hadn't even asked him yet for his blessing to propose to Skye. I was going to do that after this trip. But basically, he was already giving me his blessing. And I was shocked. And so later that night, I met up with her mom and in the hotel room. We went inside into another room and I learned Korean, and so for about 20 or 30 minutes, I spoke in Korean with her and addressed all her concerns. And basically, I had to tell her why I love Skye very clearly. And she didn't ask me these things, but I knew this is what she needed to hear, that I didn't just love her, you know, like, you know, just skin deep, you know, just I like her for her looks or I like her for this and I'm going to leave her later. But told her really deep why I loved her, explaining these things. I told her that I know how to make money, that I was an engineer, that if something were to happen with a ministry out here, I will not put the ministry first. I will put my wife first. I'll put her first, that she will be my priority in my life, and that I will take care of her. And that if I have to drop the ministry and get an engineering job, I will do that. And, you know, I was just being an adult about this, telling her, you know, my responsibility. I wasn't being like, oh, weak or shaky. I was being very clear with her. And at the very end of our conversation, she said, I give you my blessing. And she let me, you know, propose to Skye. And that was momentous. Skye was outside, like, praying the whole time. Like, man, they're taking a long time, you know, talking. But it was crucial. So I proposed to Skye. And what was interesting was we found out later that her dad, before we even dated, is prophetic, just like Skye is. And he had had a dream. And in his dream, it was like, I might get this wrong, so he can correct me later. But it's basically like in like a church setting, this tall, kind of handsome guy in pastor's clothes. Thank you, Abuji. You know, in pastor's clothes, but he's not really a pastor. Okay, so he's like in pastor's clothes, but he's not really a pastor. And so when Skye told him who she was dating and how like, oh, he does orphanage ministry, but he helps out as a pastor, you know, all these different things, and then sent the picture, Abuji recognized me from the dream. So, oh, that's him. So when he Skyped with us, he was just already heart open, you know, because God had revealed to him that we were supposed to be together. Now, he didn't spoil that. He told us that later, and that was key. But do you see how God was involved in our relationship and how God wove things together? And what was so cool is even our relationship, we could talk about memories from 2004 and 2005 and different things. And so God blessed our romance just so powerfully. And when we got married, Skye never imagined that her father would be able to walk her down that aisle. And that her father, who had divorced her mother years ago, they would be able to sit together in peace, reconciled during our wedding. And that both of our fathers were able to pray a father's blessing over us. And you know, her father being saved, she never imagined this, that would be able to happen. So I think I have a picture of our wedding. I'm going to go ahead and put that up. This is after we got married. So that was one of our pictures. Yeah. I don't have a clock. How much time do I have left? Sorry, guys. Okay. All right. Good. All right. I have some more I want to share, but I think I wanted to wrap it up there in terms of the testimony. Do you guys see how romantic God is? And how I surrendered my life to the Lord, and how it wasn't just this like, here's the wife you're supposed to marry, and this is the way it's supposed to be. Skye and I have so much fun together. We love being married together. And one of the lies that society teaches through movies and through different things is that once you get married, romance stops. That's a lie. The truth is romance should build as you're together. Notice a lot of movies and a lot of just different, you know, books and different things, they will portray the dating relationship. And it's like fireworks and it's very fast. But once it gets to the wedding day, credits come down. Okay, almost every Disney movie is that way. And they live happily ever after, whatever. You know, who knows what happened. But they focus on that romance. And I believe this is part of what has jaded a lot of people towards romance, is that they expect the fireworks early on. And then they see so much divorce and they see such few movies on good marriages that they don't really have hope that marriage is going to be fun. And the sad thing is there are a lot of married couples that lose their fire once they get married because they don't put that effort. They don't have the mentors. They don't have those that they're looking to. And so they just kind of stop giving that effort. That's not the way it should be. Sky and I still have our date day every week, as does Pastor Christian, Pastor Aaron. We're adamant about that. We have married couples community group, and we make sure that we keep accountable. You'd be surprised by our accountability questions that we do. It's like backwards from your usual accountability questions. But, you know, it's challenges, and it's healthy. And so you see healthy marriages in this house. And I also want to break off a lie that my marriage, okay, all right, maybe if I surrender my life to the Lord and, you know, give this up, that then it will be perfect and everything will be right. We have our own unique testimony, but there are other testimonies in this house that went through a lot of struggles. Pastor Christian, Pastor Aaron, if you hear their testimony, how they came together, they went through a lot of hardship with their family. Pastor Caleb and Mina, Pastor John and Anita, okay? And you would think, oh, that's not romantic, or oh, no, that's not what I want. But the truth is that almost all those dramas that you love make you cry every episode because of the tragedies and the struggles that they're going through. Almost all those books, The Pride and Prejudice, that, you know, it's like so good that you enjoy, have so much tragedy, have so much conflict, have so much difficulty. That's part of romance. That's part of proving your love. That's part of, wow, they got through that and their love is like gold. You see, it's an honor if your relationship can go through those things. And when you're going through it, maybe you're not like, oh, this is so romantic. You're not like that at all. But when you get through it and you rise above it and you look back on those different difficult memories, you have a testimony to share that inspires people and that will make them cry at how strong your love was and how good God is. You see, God already broke through Pastor Aaron's family. God broke through and Pastor Mina's family. And we're knowing God's going to break through in Pastor Anita and other families where it still hasn't come around yet. And when it happens, that testimony is going to be so beautiful. But if you look at their marriages now, whether that's happened or not, it's still beautiful. It's still so good. These are marriages that the world is jealous for. David Kang, who's married to Haywan in Sydney, Australia, he did a short video documenting the different married couples in New Philadelphia Church. He just did interviews with us. And he put up the promo, and just the promo alone inspired people around the globe. People sent in money to him. They said, I never had hope for marriage, but I saw these couples, and it inspired me. We've had people share with us of dreams that they've had of different married couples in New Philly, just together with their kids, and seeing real family. And they're like, wow, I'd never seen that before, and it's so inspiring. It gives me so much hope. That's what you should expect for romance. That's what you should expect when you guys get married. That if you get married in this house and say you guys have a little slump or have a little struggle, you're not alone like most of the couples out there. You're not ashamed and let's just deal with it by ourselves like so many Koreans. You got married couples CG. You got these pastors that are checking in on you. You have people that you can open up to. And so all these couples, they're getting stronger and stronger because they're learning from the older couples. This is such a healthy place. God is a God of romance. Now, I got about 10 minutes left, and I wanted to hit on a couple things to point out regarding for the women and for the men. And this is stuff that I think has really destroyed a lot of people's mindset towards marriage. For women, romance without commitment is dangerous and it's scary. Okay, romance without commitment is dangerous and scary. This is part of the reason why we have dating protocol. The sad thing is a lot of movies show crazy romantic scenes. But if you substitute the guy in the scene with an ugly guy or with a very poor guy or with a very old man, it would be very creepy. Very creepy. So let's watch a couple of these scenes. Let's watch The Notebook. Who likes The Notebook? All right, we're going to watch a couple scenes here. Now, think, if this was a guy you were not interested in, how would you feel? Okay, imagine if a guy did this to you. Not great Gosling, but someone else. Ryan Gosling, whatever this guy is.
Hey! What are you doing?
Hey, you can't do that!
I'll tell you when I get down, Tommy.
I'm Noel Calhoun.
So?
So it's really nice to meet you.
Who is this guy?
I don't know. Noel Calhoun.
I would really like to take you out.
Friend, do you mind?
You can't sit more than two people in a chair, Noah!
Okay, Tommy, all right.
Get down, Noah! You're gonna kill yourself!
Noah, cut it out!
Well, you grabbing me?
What? No!
No?
No!
No.
Hey, pal, she just told you.
Why not?
I don't know, because I don't want to.
All right, well, you leave me no other choice then.
Oh, my God.
I'm not kidding. No, stop
blowing. What are you doing?
Oh, I grabbed the ball.
I'm going to ask you one more time. Will you? Or will you not go out with me?
Cut it. Okay. How romantic. Now, I know watching that movie, he's a very handsome guy. So it's like, oh, it's very romantic. No, it's not. All right, now, later scenes in that movie, when they're committed to each other and they have, you know, like, I didn't watch the movie, but, you know, when they do things, that is romantic. But so many scenes like this are distorting people's views of romance. I got another clip for you. This is the movie Big Fish. Big Fish.
Daffodils.
They're your favorite flower.
How did you get so many?
I called everywhere in 5 states. I told them it was the only way to get my wife to marry me.
You don't even know me.
I have the rest of my life to find out.
So that woman is engaged to another man. And he shows up and tries to woo her. Gets the daffodils from 5 different states. And what follows is the fiancé runs up in anger and jealousy. And they portray him as a big buffoon to try and justify that it's good that she leaves her fiancé for this guy she barely knows. Whirlwind romance, mystery, wow, it's like to the extreme. But there's no commitment here, and that's actually really creepy. I don't know if you guys know, and I hope you don't, but there's a movie coming out on Valentine's Day called 50 Shades of Grey. And what this movie is about, it's from a book about this guy who's a very rich, handsome man, who's very warped-minded and likes what's called S&M. This is like beating people, causing pain for sexual ecstasy. All right, this is like hardcore porn. And she falls for him, and he gradually introduces her to his torture chamber. All right, I can't believe they're making a movie about this, and please do not watch this. Don't even watch the trailers of it. But that's the premise, okay? And he even tells her in the movie, I'm not into romance. And she's like, okay. You know, like, you're mysterious because you're saying that, so it's romantic. And Sky mentioned, you know, if they substituted that guy with, like, a really old man in a shack, it would be a horror movie. Welcome to my chamber. You know, like, ugh. But because he's rich and because he's handsome, oh, okay. And this is distorting a lot of women and their views of romance. And so when we counsel young couples, it takes some time to filter this stuff out of the young girls, these false expectations of romance. You see, it's usually not that romantic early on. It's romantic in very subtle ways, but you got to have commitment first before you can bring all the daffodils from 5 different states. Now, if that guy was married to her, okay, if he was married to her, that would be so romantic what he did. That would be beautiful, a little crazy, but beautiful. All right, but because he didn't even know her and she was a fiance of some other guy, it's creepy. All right. And this is stuff where I think a lot of girls need to kind of pull back on selfishness, on that he'll come to me, he'll do these things for me. These are my expectations. This is what needs to happen. And it doesn't mean, oh, you know, expect romance, expect your dating to be boring. It's not that at all. It's that you need to get to a place of commitment before those things should happen. And they will. But if you are in that selfish mindset that, man, he's got to bring me all the daffodils in the world and he's got to do all these things that I've seen in all these movies, you're not going to be satisfied because there's no guy like this. There's that Korean drama where it was like this centuries-year-old alien that could, like, run around and, like, just stop time and do all sorts of stuff. Your guy can't do that. It's very romantic, but you just, it's not going to work. Same goes for guys, though. Guys have been, they have seen more beautiful women in their lifetime than all the previous men generations combined. Think about this. If you grew up 100 years ago in a town or even in the city of Seoul, how many beautiful women would you see? You would see the butcher's daughter, okay? You would see, like, that other girl. You would only see so many girls, and they didn't have makeup. They didn't have Photoshop. They didn't have all these other things. And so there wasn't this, she's got to be beautiful. I got to be so attracted to her in order to ask her out. And I get so angry at guys that come up to me and list, you know, different girls that, oh, maybe I'm interested in her and her and her. And they have nothing in common except for they're cute. Okay? And I'm like, well, do you know this person, their personality? No. But I think it'll work out. And I'm like, well, yeah, we'll see if that works out in 20 years. When you realize you have nothing in common and now she's not cute anymore because she's 20 years older. You know, and so are you. So I'm going to show you some pictures here. Let's see if you recognize these people. All right, this is Twilight. Look at her. No makeup here. Next picture. Magazine cover. Very different. Very different, don't you think, from the previous picture. That was Kristen Stewart. Next picture. Anybody recognize her? J-Lo. No makeup. That was from last year. Last year, that was J-Lo. Next picture. Yeah. Bit different. Next picture. All right, I'm sorry, they're all old because I don't know current female celebrities. Anybody recognize her? Britney Spears. I don't know if you notice all that acne. A lot of celebrities have acne. Next picture. That's her this year. Okay? Next picture. Anybody recognize her? Kim Kardashian, the sexiest woman in the world, married to Kanye West. Next picture. Show that again. Go. Previous picture. She's cute, okay? She's a pretty woman. She is not unattractive in this picture, but there's a level, you know, of beauty. Now, next picture. That is unattainable unless you have surgery and a lot of makeup and Photoshop. It's not reality. It's not reality. And so this is something that I don't expect guys to be able to just change in their mind. And girls got to understand this as well. There are so many pictures on the internet, so much on TV, so much in movies, and pornography for that matter as well, of all these very attractive women that they find and they scout out, and then they put all this makeup on them, and they do all of this Photoshop and all these different things, so guys are programmed to believe that there are lots of these women out there, and these are the only women that I can be attracted to. My friend growing up, his name is Hong. He loved Saved by the Bell. He loved all those different TV shows. Now, he was Chinese, but he went to a school that had mostly white, black, and Hispanic people, and he watched all these TV shows that were just of white people or of black people. So he was never attracted to an Asian. And I remember his mom had a calendar in the house, and one of the months, it was the actress from Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon. I forget her name, but a very beautiful woman, especially at that time. This was years ago. And I said, well, what about her? And he said, well, I guess she's okay. And I said, out of a billion Asian women, you think the most attractive woman is okay. But this is what TV had done to him. And he knew it. He knew he had been brainwashed into not believing that Asians were that attractive and into, you know, wanting this type of woman that he kept seeing. This is stuff that we got to get out of our system. And we have to be aware of. It doesn't mean you can't enjoy movies. Doesn't mean you can't look at the internet. It doesn't mean that those things are bad, but we have to be aware because if we dwell on this too much, it creates selfishness and it creates standards that are unattainable. And that's why the marriage rate is falling apart. People are not satisfied. They now have 1,000 friends on Facebook, and because their standards are so high, they can't choose from any of them. That's not the way it should be. God wants us to love them for who they are. Not for the skin deep features, not for, you know, do something crazy and be rich or anything like that. He wants us to love them for the heart. All right, for Sky, I honestly was never physically attracted to her before we started dating her. The reasons why I was interested in her, why, were because I was comfortable with her, because we had a lot of fun together, and because we had similar humor. We would laugh a lot, be goofy, all right, be silly as friends. That's what attracted me to her more than anything else. And it was as we dated, she's a beautiful woman, but it was as we dated that I began to appreciate that beauty and see it more and more. That's the way it should be. It shouldn't be romance like this, and it shouldn't be physical attraction like this. Rather, it should be gradual. Let's get our feet wet. Oh, as I discover this about this person, she's so much more attractive than I ever thought. Oh, as I'm committed with this guy and he's committed to me, I'm beginning to appreciate these little things, and they're very romantic. He doesn't have to swim across the ocean or do something ridiculous. I'm seeing the romance and getting to know him more. That's the way it should be, church. And this is what I want for this church. I want this church to be able to surrender their hearts, their romance, these different things to the Lord. Not worrying about themselves, not acting out of compulsion, not acting out of their flesh, and that I got to have only the cutest girl, okay, in the church, or only this, and not, he's got to be this type of guy and this type of demeanor for my heart to open to him. That's skin deep. And that's not what God intends for us. If you let God write your romance story, you will be far more blown away than any Kim Kardashian, than any Ryan Gosling, than anyone else on the world, because God knows who you need. God knows who will truly bless you. All right, at this time, I'm going to invite the praise team up. And I want us to pray. I shared during my testimony that I went through a season of healing, and it was critical for me. And I'll tell you that when I dated Sky, because I had gone through that season of healing and because I had grown in my identity in Christ, I was confident. I wasn't a nervous wreck as we dated. I mean, there's the jitters, you know, during the first date or so, but I was strong. And because I'd served in the orphanage ministry, because I had done so much for the Lord, the selfishness that had plagued me when I was a teenager, a lot of it had been broken out of me. God had healed me of these different areas. God had really prepared me for marriage. God wants to do the same for you. God doesn't want you to think, oh, I'll wait for 10 years and then I'll get married. Okay? God doesn't want you to do that. God wants you to be praying for your spouse now. God wants you to be just surrendering your romance to the Lord as well. Some of you are older and you're you know, kind of getting a little fidgety, kind of like, come on, you know, God, what is going on? And God's wanting for you to continue to just lay it down before him and to know that his story is going to be the best. That if you just go after someone for going after them and get out of his plan, get out of the blessing of the house, you're not going to get the full blessing. You're not going to have that testimony that's so powerful. But as you submit these things to him, he's going to bless you tremendously.